Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. For those of you keeping score at home, episode 170 for our show. Not sure if that's a milestone, but we're pretty proud of it. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And with me, of course, Jim Vessel. How are you, sir?
Hey, man. How's it going? I'm good. Very good.
We're good. We've got the whole triumvirate here. We had a busy weekend of splashy Sigmar models. We got this evening, we've got a few instruction manuals that have new stats for the new Drukhari for the upcoming Codex. By the way, is not going to be available for quite some time, apparently. And we'll get into a little bit of TTS etiquette a little bit later in the show. So, gentlemen, let's take a look at the new spanky models here. The Chick-fil-A elves, I like to call them, because they're considerably less cow than the previous models. But they look, pretty cool. The Lumineths, yeah. The bolt thrower,
Yeah, I really like...
They all look pretty cool.
I mean, I really like the... I mean, all the names are just very wordy, but basically the Swordmasters of Hoeth that they've turned into Lumineth models, I think those are my favorite sculpts of that group. And some of the characters, especially the... I think it's there's like a little sorcerer, like a mage, a maiden. So that one's really cool. The guy in the clouds kind of neat, but it's a little too Dragon Ball for me. So not sure if I like that one yet.
I just think it's funny that this army is like a year old.
This army's only like a year old, and they're doubling its size.
Well, there's been a lot of complaints because the launch battle tome came out 7 months ago, if you can believe it. And there's now a new battle tome coming out with this release as well. So I'm not quite sure what the timeline is. I assume it's going to be within 4 months. So they're almost Space Marine levels of like Codex refreshing. So from what I understand, I do know that if you buy the Techless, I believe it's the Techless book, that does have the rules in it as well. So it's kind of similar to what they did with the Chaos Space Marine book, where they like release the book with just the new data sheets. So I think that's kind of what they've done with the second book. It's not actually like a full rewrite. It's just the original book plus the new data sheets. But if you're a Lumineth player, that's super annoying.
It's a super annoying in general, especially when you've got people like, you know, Harlequins looking for, can I get a seventh unit, you know, please?
Yeah.
My God, it's
terrible. We were talking a little bit about that before the show. So I think definitely like when you look at the size of like this Lumineth release, they could have basically redone the entire Eldar range in half as many kits. And shut up all those Eldar players that have been complaining about Plastic Aspect Warriors for the last 10 years in one fell swoop with half as many kits, but instead we get weird flying cow elves. That's here, neither here nor there. So, anyways.
And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't there in the old line, there was a set of twins that were like riding a dragon?
Yes,
wasn't that a thing in Warhammer Fantasy?
Well, there's Imric. I think Imric was a dragon prince.
And then he's talking about the wood elf princesses. I forget what their name is.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that was two Wood Elf characters on a green dragon, I believe. But there is actually a so someone actually posted it. There's a picture of two young elf characters in the old High Elf book that look very eerily similar to these new ones and have different names. So I don't know if these are their new and improved like AOS names. Just like everything has like a new name except. So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm actually really curious where Tyrion's at, because they keep talking about him, but he's nowhere to be found, and like no model for him anywhere.
So. Well, that's why when
I was hanging out with Vect. So.
When I started seeing more models, I thought they're like, oh, yeah, these are the basically his half of the Lumineth, because I thought it said something about like...
Teclis's half or Tyrion's half? Like Tyrion's this new half. Stuff they just released.
Then I thought they would say that it was Tyrion's half, but I mean they haven't actually said right. That. So,
other fun stuff. We've got some mixed reviews here from our group, but so they got the new Nighthaunt guy, who's actually still attached to the crucifix, which is kind of creepy but kind of cool at the same time.
Cool. It's cool range.
And then we got the new Sigmarine there, who's landing like he's dropping down from the sky, and everybody's already talking about how they're going to make that into a smash cap.
Reminds me, his head kind of reminds me of Rogal Dorn from the 30k Rogal Dorn model. He's got that like kind of square jaw, white hair, white cropped hair. Like maybe he's Rogal Dorn, like reforged as a Stormcast.
I think you're right. He does look like that. Reminds me a little like Stacy Keach as well, or Ryan Dennehy. That's what he reminds me of. So, And then this one's, I don't know, maybe you guys, the white on horseback, I just kind of went like, is it not like a, it literally looks like they just made a new version of an old bottle.
Yeah, well, so the, there's a plastic white king on foot that looks almost identical to this. But I have to say, like, I don't know how many, like, people that are listeners that even care about AOS and fantasy and stuff, but this model for me is like the core fantasy like visual design that I want. Like that whatever that guy came from, that's the fantasy like scheme that I like. I don't want all this like weird cloud flying elf cow hat stuff. I want like cool grimy whites that lived in a barrow and like are gonna like kill you and just murder you, and you know what I mean? So like the aesthetic of that white king is like for me my like ideal fantasy aesthetic, so I really like this model.
Okay, and then we had for your warbands or underworlds, you got a savage orcs or whatever, bone splitters I think they're called. I'm kind of like, okay, put them on a tropical island and have them chase Johnny Depp around. I think that's kind of works out. And then Warhammer Quest, The Cursed City. This is starting to grow on me. When it first came out, I was like, are you serious? But
I'm super pumped. I'm definitely, this is for me. I've never bought any of the Warhammer Quests. I didn't even buy Blackstone Fortress because I've not been into that many board games. But I have been playing a lot more board games during the lockdown. And so for me, not only are the models amazing, but like it's got that same kind of grimy fantasy aesthetic of the White King, which mm-hmm. I just talked about. Whereas like Silver Tower didn't really, it was a little too fantastical for me. So I like that this is more of like a traditional kind of dark and kind of grimy setting.
Well, say what you will about Silver Tower, I still think that there was the one Kyrick Acolyte model in that. It's still the coolest one. Mad that that's the only place you get that particular Acolyte. This one I'm not 100% for sure on yet. I like the models, but at the same time, I'm a little bit confused on what's going on. I don't feel like I understand what the faction is that is the antagonist. I feel like it's just random things.
So they have been teasing a faction called Gravediggers in AOS, for those that follow. It doesn't have a book yet, but there's a lot of rumors going around that they're going to be the next big faction after Lumineth, potentially in the AOS 3rd edition box set, which is also rumored to be out this summer. So, versus Stormcast, because everyone knows that there's going to be Stormcast.
Right, but are they going to be undead themselves? Are they mortals that just follow death?
Yeah, so from what I understand, like, I don't know if you remember the vampire warband for Underworlds that they previewed, that were, like, very traditional, like, kind of called back to the old vampire bloodlines from fantasy. But from my understanding, it's going to be kind of that old whites, werewolves, vampires kind of style faction, with like a lot of that kind of, basically the old undead.
Okay.
Not Flesh Eater Courts and not Nighthaunt, but like old school undead with like skeletons and like,
so like necromancers and stuff,
vampires. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
That's just, I don't know anything.
One thing that was highly teased, and so kind of came kind of like Marvel MCU version, it came in after the credits. It was the a pretty easy preview to figure out. We have a new Bellicor model on our way.
Happens to fall under 40K.
So that was my question, because when I look at the coolest thing I loved was on the base, there's the old school Chaos mm-hmm. Warrior, and he's got like a spirit rising out of his armor. I was like, is there going to be like a 40K base so you can use them back and forth between fantasy and 40K?
Yeah, someone actually did like a weird, you know how internet people are really good at like Photoshop? Someone like took all the stills from that video and kind of like cropped them together and kind of built like a silhouette of the Bellicor model as it's supposed to be. And then use the Chaos Warrior on the base as a scale. And apparently based on that, like kind of, again, this is just a mock-up. It's about the size of one of the I think they said it was about the size of Magnus the Red. Yeah, so I'm not sure if that's actually true, because obviously, like, they did, that's like a bit of like internet hocus pocus, but if he was as size of Magnus the Red, that'd be super sick.
No, that'd be really cool, because that's one thing that was always a problem with the old model. He was so tiny. Small. You know, he could hide him everywhere.
Tiny. Even by, like, Demon Prince, like the old Metal Demon Prince standards, he's tiny.
You know, actually, I feel bad because I don't think I actually bought, because I was so dismayed with the old model. I think I used a War Machine model in his place. Now that
I have Creature Caster makes a really cool Bellicor kind of ripoff model that I actually have in pieces, and I was actually just about to build it, like literally a day before the preview. But now I'm like, no, I'm gonna wait till this one comes out.
That was me with Abaddon.
I don't know, those Creature Caster stuff is really cool. I love their models. Awesome. So
great company too. They're local.
I knew they're in Canada. Yeah, I didn't know they're local to you. That's pretty cool.
Well, not good friends. Not like we hang out, but I'm they're one of their owners. We go a long way back to like our GW. Known them for a long.
Very cool. All right, other breaking news we talked about. So what's been widely known, if you want to know what's going to be in a new codex, check the instruction manuals of the newly done boxes, and Drukhari are no exception. So witches and Kabbalite warriors instruction manuals, as well as the incubi, have been circling around. Incubi, no changes. Pretty much everything matches what's on the Warhammer community page, so we'll skip that for tonight. So let's talk a little bit about... start with the witches. If you're waiting for a earth-shattering kaboom, this is not the place to find it. So not much has changed. I'm trying to be optimistic that, you know, the special sauce will be in the rules and the new obsessions and power from pain, because so far the stat lines of these weapons is control C, control V.
Traditionally with those like box data sheets, the special rules are never there, so there's always like something more hidden that we don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm trying to be like, because I remember when the Death Guard stuff came out, you're like, okay, this went up a point. But then when you factor in the whole minus one toughness and all these other doodads, you're like, oh my god, they're insane. But this still seems underwhelming. I don't know. Won't rattle through it real quick. So blast pistols and blasters remain unchanged completely. They're still one shot, same range, strength 8, minus 4 AP, d6 damage. All your poison weapons have gotten weird. So your splinter pistols and splinter rifles are now, they're still the same range, same rapid fire pistol 1, but they're now strength 2, which I thought was odd. And we remember seeing the splinter cannon being strength 3 with this optional rule says poison 4+. So do they still function the same, or are we like going back to the old rules that, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what that has to do with how the new system works. So we have to be patient about that. No AP bonuses. We only on the splinter cannon, splinter rifle, and splinter pistols are still AP 0, 1 damage. So I'm like, okay, I still need 74 Catalyte warriors to kill 5 intercessors. Okay, all right. Plan accordingly. Where it does get a little interesting is some of the specialty weapons, like the Shredder got an extra 6 inches of range, so that's kind of nifty. We already talked about the Splinter Cannon. Everybody's talking about the Dark Lance. It's now, instead of D6 damage, right, it's D3 plus 3, so... Yay, that's always good. I like that. The Agonizer improved its AP by 1, so it's now AP minus 3, but it's damage strength asterisk. So it used to be a poison weapon. I'm assuming that's still the case, but we'll have to find out. Same thing with the Hectari Knife. It used to be strength user, AP 0, 1 damage, which made, you know, which is kind of hit like a wet noodle. Now it's strength asterisk, which I'm not sure what that's going to be, and then it's AP minus 1. So I'm like, all right, it's getting a little better. Not sure what the asterisk means, but we'll find out. Hydra Gauntlets, if you have a couple, you might want to pick some up, because they radically changed. They're now strength user plus 2, which is before they were strength user. They're AP minus 2, improvement from AP minus 1, and then 1 damage. So I was like, ooh, that looks like it could be fun. And the Razor Flail is also strength asterisk, as is the Impaler, but nothing else has changed. Don't know if you still get the extra attacks with the Hydra Flail. I'm not sure at this point. And the Plasma Grenades have not changed. Still D6 shots, strength 4, AP minus 1, 1 damage. So it's like an episode of WandaVision. I have more questions than answers at the end of this.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, anything groundbreaking. I think besides the Dark Lance, I think everything else, I kind of wait to see how with those Ostertics? How do I even say that word? How those change. So we'll have to see. But
yeah, I'm trying to be positive about it. Like I said, there's a lot more out there. And so I'm optimistic and trying to be patient as the new stuff comes out. But hopefully we'll get some news on that soon. But yeah, there's really, you know, I guess we'll get some more drips and drabs as stuff comes out. So, but one thing that's always been fun with playing this faction over the years is they do change radically from codex to codex. I mean, just compare this codex to the previous codex, to the 5th edition codex. I mean, the wild swings in how their mechanics works. So it makes Necron players who, with their will be back rolls, look totally stable.
Yeah, I've heard a few wins as far as Dark Drakkar are concerned. It sounds like they're going to play fairly similar, but obviously I know some of the more, like, you know, most people always take Prophets of Flesh, so I'd expect things like the 4+ way. Army-wide 4++, basically. It's probably a little too strong.
Yeah. From what I heard, that was switched just like Death Guard to -1 damage. I've heard that a few times, because that's actually one of the Psychic Awakening abilities. And then I'm hearing that it's not just Drakkari will be the first time we see it, but it's supposed to be an Eldari ability across the board. Is they basically have transhuman physiology, but on 2 hit rolls. So you can never hit them better than a 4+. And then you can stack lightning reflexes on top of that. So actually, you could possibly be hitting them on 5s. Not sure it's that. Yeah. I just don't see how that could be army-wide. I don't know. I'll have to figure that one out.
One thing you didn't bring up, and I'm not sure if you're planning to, but the preview for next, specifically the thing that I wanted to bring to the attention is that they've repackaged some of the sprues from the Indomitus box as full, like, basically, like, it's called, like, Heroes of the Chapter, and it's basically the sprue that has Judiciar, the Eradicators, and then, like, the 3 of the Space Marine characters. And they're releasing that as kind of like a single, like, box set, I guess, so that you can get access to those models. And the same thing with the Necron side, they're releasing that standalone kind of character sprue. So I'm just not sure what you guys' thoughts are on that.
I think it's a very interesting packaging. It's not something we've seen before, and I'm wondering what the situation is. It easier to ship? Is it that we have a lot of these Indominus boxes because we promised them for Christmas, and now that with COVID, we don't have a lot of anything else lying around? So is that what this is? Because I did want to talk about the other products that they're coming out this week, and those really got my attention as going, it just feels like it's Thursday night and we're serving leftovers. So at the house, you know, it's whatever we have. And we don't have enough money for takeout, but we're just going to clean out the refrigerator here. Because if you look at, so right off the bat, everyone is already, at least in our local area, jumping on the I will split the kill team box. So the new kill team Nexus is going to be the hottest selling kill team item ever. And no one's going to be playing kill team. They just want the heavy intercessor. So everybody's already calling, who wants my Necron half? And if anybody's interested, I'm interested in the board and the terrain pieces. So you can PM me if you want. But the other thing I thought was bizarre is they're re-releasing kill zones for kill team. But when you look at it, it's the old terrain, like ancient. Like, it's not even the stuff that came out with kill team. I was like, what the hell? All they did was resize the boards, because the original boards that came with those sets were the wrong dimensions. So now I'm going like, is there really nothing else in the warehouse? Are you just trying to get rid of this?
I would imagine that these releases are planned a long time in advance, so I don't think that they're kind of a reaction to some supply issues. I do think, though, it's just the way that they're repackaging, like, I have a lot of thoughts about these kinds of gated releases where it's like, we're going to put it behind where, like, a big box, and the only way you can get it is through, you know, like, basically ordering a box with a bunch of models you don't need. I think that's like a, you know, it's smart business, but it's really shitty from a guest perspective, customer's perspective. Not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, it reminds me of the comic book store I used to go to. They used to sell 3 comics as of Oregon. You're like, oh, that's awesome. You look at the cover and you flip it over. Well, that both his comic books are awesome. And what you don't know is the third comic in the middle is like Power Pack 31. You know, it's like, oh, Jesus, terrible comic book. You know, just something that no one wants to read. And
I don't know. Are Flayed Ones core troops in Necron book?
I want to say
I didn't think so either. I thought it was Immortals. Like, are they core troops? Like, I thought they'd be like Immortals and Warriors and Scarabs or Necrons.
They're not troops.
I want to say it's Mortals, Warriors, and Lich Guard. Or I think we're the only ones.
No.
Anyways, I guess my point being is, like, if you're going to at least do something like this, where you're going to have a box
they're not core.
First of all, the Flayed Ones, the troops, they're like probably elites or something.
No, they're elites, yeah, but they're not core.
Okay, so yeah, so that's so this is where my problem arises with this box. So first of all, these sets were teased 6 months ago with the launch of the Basic Marine book, maybe slightly before that. Like, I think maybe in October they kind of, or even before that. So people have been waiting on these sets since the Marine book came out, which is at the launch of 9th edition. And had they released this box then at the time, I probably would have had a little bit less. And then, you know, that was the only time where you could get these models. That would be a little bit different. But obviously they didn't. They waited now almost 5 months, 6 months after the book's out to get these models. So people have been waiting for these models forever, right? To the point where there's literally, you can go get like, on certain sites, you can go get like 3D printed heavy intercessors. People have been converting and scratch building their own models. So people have been waiting for these models for quite some time. So first of all, that's an issue. So there's huge demand for these models. Second of all, the box set, you have one half of the box set, which is a core troop choice for the most popular faction in the game that people have been really waiting for. And then you have the other half of the box being an elite choice, a close combat elite choice for a shooting army that no one wants. And you're basically forcing players to purchase $80, $90 of product that they're not going to want. So, I don't know. It just feels like the boxes are imbalanced. They could have at least paired the heavy intercessors with something that was equally appealing. But, so, that's my only problem. That's my main problem with it, I guess.
Yeah, and I've seen that with a couple other boxes. Actually, the box that's coming out, the Sisters versus Jukari one, so you can get Lilith. That's another one. I'm like going, the Sisters side of the box is pretty awesome. The Jukari half is kind of a mishmash. I don't know what to do with it. I mean, the Scourges aren't even Witch Cult, so they're kind of not even the same sub faction. It's kind of weird. So yeah, sometimes they have these. I'm sure it makes sense to somebody, like this sprue and that sprue, and it's economically makes sense or something like that. Well, but from a game standpoint, I don't get it. And from a collector standpoint, I don't get it.
Speaking of illogical box sets, Games Workshop's Death Guard Combat Patrol is not even a legal army. You need to take... it only comes with one unit of Plague Marines, which are minimum 5 and maximum 10. And you only get 7 Plague Marines, and it comes with 30 Poxwalkers, which means in order to field those, you need 2 units of Plague Marines. So the Combat Patrol, which is supposed to be an army in a box, is not even legal.
It's like in the old days when I remember with Epic, if you look at the Spirit, you had to buy 4 boxes because there wasn't enough to fill the single unit of one of the models in the Spirit. So you had to buy like 4. So you had 4, and then you added a Farseer to the units, and then you had like a 1 unit of this one Aspect Warrior.
So I just hope this doesn't become a trend, because I just think it must be really frustrating if you're a Space Marine player. You're probably gonna have to get 2 or 3 or 4 of these sets just to have enough heavy intercessors for your army,
if you're able to.
Yeah. I like the thing. This is a. Yeah, that's the other thing too. But it's, yeah, everything we saw this weekend for, you know, again, no release dates, not even hints, you know, soon. I don't know what soon means. So I like to think this is a supply chain issue that's related to COVID and should go away soon. But in the meantime, I'm, when is this coming out? If it's going to come out. And all of a sudden, it's, you know, the game has always been semi-expensive, but it hasn't been to the point where the deepest wallets wins the game. Now it could, and that becomes very frustrating. So
they're lucky in a sense that there's not a lot of events going on, because from my perspective, like, I've been waiting on 2 Games Workshop orders like 4 weeks, and you know, at the end of the day, I got other stuff to paint, so it's not It's not like I needed it for an event and now I don't have it. And so I think that's kind of tempered a little bit of the customer anger, but they need to either slow down the releases and focus on rebuilding their existing stock. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a manufacturer, so I'm not sure. But I assume they have a finite amount of capacity and production capacity. And if they are focusing it on new stuff, then they can't be making molds for old stuff. I assume that's how it works, but I'm not a scientist. So, you know, if they didn't release anything for, you know, again, 2 to 3 weeks just so they could catch up on the backlog, I don't think that would be the worst thing. I know there's a lot of people waiting for product out there, including myself.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Other topics. So for those of us who do not have product or are unable to meet in person, we've all been introduced over COVID-19, the miracle that is TTS. So a tabletop simulator has exploded, sort of the gamer version of Zoom calls. And so some of us have embraced it. Some of us have shunned it. Some of us come around on it. And Jim, you had some expertise on it and a little bit of etiquette and how to best use.
Yeah, so
the
it's just for the people that don't know. So Tabletop Simulator, it's a PC program. It's like a game. You can get it from Steam, I believe. And basically, you can download models and armies and tables essentially to authentically recreate your 40K armies. And then there's actually even tools to convert Battlescribe lists into 3D models. So you can basically upload a Battlescribe list and then through a little bit of tech know-how, essentially have it populate your list. So all your models have stats in game. So there's lots of really cool tech that people have developed over the last little while to make this experience of playing Tabletop Simulator as close to the real thing as possible and as like smooth as possible, because the base Tabletop Simulator experience is quite rough. And so a lot of players have gone through a lot of effort and to kind of create this ecosystem where it is now possible for me to play a game. I can play a 2,000-point competitive game against anyone across the world in about the same time it would take me to play a real life game. So it's the games for me now with all the different cool tools and templates and kind of things that they've introduced in the game are taking about 2.5 to 3 hours depending on the armies and the kind of familiarity of the players. So just something to know. And as a result of that, the kind of advances in technology, there have been some tabletop simulator events being thrown. So we're talking like RTTs, tournaments where you can basically sign up online and then you play games of TTS against opponents. Generally, with these kinds of events, unlike a normal event where you might play like 3 games in a day, with TTS, you might have like a week to play your game. So the tournament might actually run over the course of where you play 1 game a week. Because as I said, the games are quite, they're pretty time consuming and like, you know, people are all over the world. So it's not like you are all available at the same time. Obviously, etc., etc. So anyways, so I've been involved, as some of you guys may know, I'm on the World Team Championship team for Team Canada. So World Team Championship is an eight-player international team tournament. I think this year it's supposed to be in Austria, if it happens at all. And I'm on the Canadian national team. There's 32 countries that send national teams to play. And so I'm on the national team, and my teammates have been playing TTS for a lot longer than I have. And because I am a hobbyist first and I like my models and I've been holding out. And so I finally gave in because they signed our team up for a tournament. So we're actually playing currently in a 32 team World Team Championship format 40K tournament. So that's a mouthful. And so we just finished Team Canada, just finished our first round. We actually won our first round against a team, and it was really cool playing that team because they had players, they're a bit of a hodgepodge team. So unlike the Canadian team, which is kind of our national team, this was a team that just kind of was 8 players that kind of came together. So I think about half the team was from Germany. One of the guys was from like Wales. I think one guy was from like Scotland. So it was really cool having like playing against his international team. The one cool part was getting up at 7 a.m. to play someone in the German time zone, because that was obviously not ideal. But I guess what I wanted to talk about is just to talk a little bit about my experience, because I think, and this kind of goes out to anyone that is interested in getting into TTS, also anyone that is maybe playing TTS competitively, but I think there's a big, divide between, not just, I know there's a huge divide between playing Tabletop Simulator and playing 40K on the tabletop. It is not the same game. The experience is not the same. There is a lot more, I don't know about you guys for 40K, but I know with 40K, if I'm playing an event, my opponent makes mistakes. There's times where I'm not necessarily going to allow take backs. Precision of movement is super important in 40K as a rule. Things like timing is really important. Things like not forgetting certain activations. So these are things that we as a community, and when we play in competitive 40K, we think they're very important for skilled play. TTS, because you're playing on a computer screen and you're playing on a zoomed-in version of the table, a lot of those kind of core fundamentals like precise movement and like speed of play and like not like losing models off the table, literally fall off the table. Like your digital models will sometimes fall off the table and you won't notice. So these are all things that you struggle with in TTS. And I know for me, I guess it's just a PSA that it's really important that you understand that if you're going to play TTS, because I actually had an experience this weekend where we actually had 8 people watching our game, because when you play a game, you stream the games, right? So we're streaming them off the Discord. I think we had about 12 people watching our game. And, mistakes happen during the game. Models get knocked over. The physics engine in the game is really clunky sometimes. And there's this there's a much larger margin of error in TTS, and you got to give people a much larger margin of error than regular play. Like this, you cannot play TTS like you play tabletop 40K. And I guess I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about I know you guys have dabbled a little bit in TTS, but through my experience playing TTS, the one thing I've learned is, being gracious and giving your opponent the benefit of the doubt, especially when you're playing in a very complicated kind of digital environment, is super, super important to the play experience. That was kind of my rant, I guess. But I just had a really bad experience with it this week where people were trying to kind of overly police preciseness on, like, they're trying to basically hold people to the preciseness you'd see on a tabletop to TTS, and it's like literally impossible because of the way that the game is played, and it really kind of left me with a really bad experience. But I just want to know what your guys' thoughts are. And
a game set up like that, I really feel like there's a certain amount of intent that needs to be expressed. Mm-hmm. So, like, let's say you're moving stuff, and you know that, at least according to what you're looking at your, let's say it's a couple of units, and you've got a movement of 8, you're, say, 12 inches away from the model, you're like, okay, I'm going to move this up the full 8 inches that I can, so that I'm 4 inches away. That's your intent. This way, the person who you're playing against knows what you're doing, and anybody who might be officiating or spectating officially, as the case may be, understands what you're trying to do. And then, when you have the charge phase later on, and if you choose to charge, you don't have to run. You don't necessarily run into this issue of, all right, I need a 4. You roll 4, and all of a sudden it's like, no, you're 5 inches away. Well, your intent was to be 4 inches away. I think the same could be said for just about anything. Where the movement is, because I know I've watched games where people are trying to move models, and for whatever reason, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the game is like, "Oh, you want to be up on the third floor of this building, don't you?" No, that's not what you want. So, and then it'd be important for both gamers to actually hold themselves to that, playing by that intent. If a gamer can't do that, especially considering the difference between being able to actually move the model yourself and using a mouse to do it. And then, of course,
I definitely agree with you.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and then there's also the fun fact that people can, if they know what they're doing, change the size of their models. Yeah. So it's also important to make sure that your models are the right size. Sometimes it's not their fault. Sometimes it's the people who programmed the models in, because I know there was a while where, I think it was rubrics that were scaled wrong just from the get-go. So it wasn't even the player's fault that was programmed it. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point, which is that the TTS experience is one where like giving your opponent the benefit of the doubt and kind of talking through every move is super, super important, just because of the kind of inaccurate nature of measurement in that game. Models get knocked around. The physics engine's really weird. Sometimes it'll like shoot your model across the table and then that knocks over three other models. Sometimes your models flip over kind of unexpectedly, and like, you know, and it's not like a crazy value. I know I'm making it sound like it's just chaos, but it is pretty smooth once you get a handle of it. But, you know, lots of mistakes do things that wouldn't normally happen on a tabletop definitely happen. And I think, that concept of like talking through all your moves, having agreements with your opponents on, you know, where a model is, how long a charge is, that's a much more important thing in TTS. And then making sure that like you don't try to gotcha people. Like if you're, you know, first of all, you're playing a fake online 40K event worth no points, with no prizes, with no bragging rights. So the fact, like, why would you even be trying to gotcha people in the first place? Like, the whole point is that we can just kind of roll some dice, basically. It's not so we can, you know, have a ton of bragging rights here. So, but I think there's just this, like, it's really important that you have a lot of, I guess, forgiveness when there's things that are, you know, a little bit ambiguous or not quite exact.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my rant on TTS. I just wish people would take, like, I think in real life, people take playing Toy Soldier sometimes. And I just wish, I think it's especially funny when people take playing fake digital versions of Toy Soldiers even more seriously.
Yeah, you can't really take a game too seriously if you can hit a button and watch the entire table flip upside down.
Which I have done accidentally as well, so.
Yeah, it's really easy to either quit your
game by accident or to flip the table if you're not careful.
Right. So I was like, yeah, I have not gotten as much for that very reason that, how do I describe this? I don't, like, there's a certain online game that's very popular. It rhymes with Overwatch. Why don't I play that more often? Because I have the simple basic, moving my characters around is hard. Mm. So to play somebody in 40K, I don't want to embarrass and waste their time when I'm still having trouble with the interface. And so that becomes, so I don't think I'm ready to do onto a TTS tournament at this point. I need more practice. That being said, it seems to be a little more, you need to be a little more forgiving. It seems really easy to knock over terrain. It seems like there's, what's the other one? I had a tough time following a few times here and there. So it's definitely a new learning curve. So just because it's the same old, it's, I agree with you. There's a little bit of you want to maintain that same level of competition, especially on that international level. You know, WTC is way up there. And where do you draw the line in terms of, okay, is this a TTS issue or is this the player trying to take advantage of a unforgiving system? I'm not sure. And that drives me nuts. I don't miss those days from the tabletop, so I can't imagine doing that on the computer. So it's just unfortunate because it's a huge resource. Like I said, you're playing somebody in Germany just by getting up early as opposed to taking a flight to Berlin.
I would have preferred the flight. if anyone wants to send me to Germany to play Warhammer.
So, yeah, I think it takes a little bit of practice. I hear what you're saying. But I also think, it's because you're able to stream the games and review it, there may be that option where, one thing we've talked about a few times is the whole, do we need referees at the table? Which kind of opens up a new topic a little bit, but for those very reasons, hey, take that back or take, here's the intent. And I showed you what my intent was. All of a sudden, I'm now 6 inches further away from the target. How did that happen? So, well, those funds.
And again, that's where I think verbalizing your intent is very.
Yeah, I mean, it's just as important in 40K, but at least, in 40K, it feels like a little bit more straightforward. So it's less, it's more forgiving if you don't necessarily.
So how did the games go? Besides,
yeah,
the,
really. So really good. I played a Custodes. So okay. So one thing that's really funny is, this is the actual other part that was funny for me is that I have not been playing 40K. So as you guys know, we've been in lockdown. Ninth edition came out when in October, or was it September? Maybe September, October, or maybe end of August.
I was saying July, but
you
okay.
You could be right. I don't. I just know I was very busy with opening a restaurant, and I recall it being maybe in August or something like that. Anyways, long story short, I think up until January, I had played one game of 9th edition 40K, like actually like physically played one, and that was literally like the week the book dropped. I played a quick like few turns just to kind of play a few rules, and then I put everything away, and I was just like focused on work, and I've been very busy. And previous to that, I hadn't played a game of 40K since February because we were in lockdown. So the last basically year of the last calendar year, I've played probably... prior to January, I had probably played two games of 40K. And so we started this event, and I didn't know TTS, so I was very rough with the interface. I also barely know how to play 9th edition at this point, it seems. And I was really lucky that I got to go up against a Custodes and Sisters player with my Death Guard. And thankfully, they don't have new books, so I know what their armies do, because their armies haven't changed since 8th edition. So that was actually really nice. I played a super nice gentleman. I think he was from Scotland. I can't remember quite exactly where he's from. I know he had an accent. He's a nice bloke, as they say. Yeah, we had a really good game. It was super, super tight. I thought I was going to lose the game pretty like on turn three. I thought I was going to lose the game, and I somehow pulled out a 12. I think the final score was like maybe like 82 to 67 or something like that, which in WTC it's a 12-8, which is I'd predicted I'd get a 13-7, so I was pretty happy with that. If anyone's interested in checking out the event, it's going to be running for like the next 5 or 6 weeks. Check out the WTC website on Facebook. The event's called Greekhammer 40K. It's a TTS event, and you can actually check out all the lists on Tourney Keeper. So if you go to Tourney Keeper, which is like basically the European version of BCP, you can actually search the event. I think it's called WTC or Greekhammer TTS Tournament, and you can see all 32 teams and all their lists. So you can actually check out all the various lists that the teams are using. So it was a really fun thing, and honestly, it just made me want to play on the tabletop more. That was my big takeaway, that I just want to get back to playing real games in person and none of this TTS nonsense. But I guess for the time being, I will do what I can to get my hammers.
Kind of this meta, you know, that you're looking at, were there any surprises
really.
In what
I
the
mean,
lists were coming
universally,
out?
Universally, we saw any of the armies with the new books on almost every team. I think a lot of that stems from the fact that the faction secondaries are so strong. I will say that overall, if you actually look at... So one of the cool things about this event is the WTC, which is the World Team Championships, as part of the event package for the real-life event, they actually put out table maps, so terrain maps, where you can actually... like every table before you go into the event, you know what it's going to look like. And there's 8 different tables, which is 8 different kind of layouts. And they were able to recreate those table layouts accurately in TTS. So you're actually playing on actual WTC tables that you would play in as if you're at the real life championship. And the thing about the WTC tables are they're extremely terrain heavy, tons of ruins, really small firing lanes, very high buildings, lots of obscuring, lots of cover. And so I think you're seeing a meta that is kind of around that terrain. Like the terrain is probably the biggest factor right now in the meta as far as this event specifically. So I'm hoping they refine the terrain down a little bit. It seems a little bit aggressive for the actual Warhammer tournament when it happens. It does seem a little bit too heavy in a lot of ways, but the tables are really cool. So
if you're interested in what that terrain looks like, it is available at the WTC sites as well as the manufacturer. But curiously,
so
do you know which table number you were playing on?
For my last game, yeah.
Seven.
And it was Mission 11, GT Mission 11, which is the first GT mission. So 6 objectives.
Okay. So give you an idea then, Jimmy, you're looking at 4 large ruins, which are the tall ones without windows, so roughly 6 inches by 8 inches, and then 12 inches tall, and then 4 small ruins, which are also 6 by 8 by 5 5 1/4 inches tall. So lots of, yeah, that's 8 yeah. buildings on the table. That's the,
and I have terrain. 2 defilers in my list, which I love. Like, they're the greatest things ever. But getting those things around on those WTC tables has been quite challenging. So we're actually able to change our list. One of the cool things about this event is we're actually able to change our list after round 2. So I'm probably going to be maybe switching out those defilers. They're just a little bit too much of a pain. As much as I love them on those tables, they're too cumbersome, and there's a lot of places that they can't go and kind of squeeze through. So it's been a little bit frustrating in that regard.
Yeah, and that's actually what I'm looking at the list here. That's actually one of the lighter tables. Table 6 would have been fits for you. 6 large ruins, 6 small ruins. And table 2 is another one. 4 large ruins, 4 small ruins, and 4 forests, which are 6
I mean, I don't mind the forest so much, because at least my infinite problem. That's actually good for me. But
I'm trying to model the our terrain for our tournaments around here to be similar to those, the WTS, and looking at the, you know, what we have. So my measurements of my ruins are a little bit different size by like 1 inch here, 1 inch there, just because materials I have lying around makes it a little bit easier. But it's pretty intense in terms of how much you need. So for example, for a 16 person event, you're looking at 60 large ruins and 76 small ruins, and that's a big commitment. It's, so
I mean, I'll just tell you now, I mean, at this, I know I mentioned I hadn't played that much ninth. So at this point, I've played probably about a dozen games between TTS and real life. And you know, I'm really liking it so far. Really, I know that sounds like it's like, Jim, why are you talking about whether you like Ninth Edition or not? It's about 6 months ago. But you know, I know a lot of people have not played it or have not been playing a ton. But the one thing that I will say I think I do really like is the focus on objectives over killing. I think that's my and it just really changes the dynamics of how the game plays, and what your priorities are as far as the things you need to do each turn to actually win the game. So it's not just the fact that the game is more objective-based and not about killing stuff, but because it's objective-based, that actually changes how the game plays. It changes things like target priority, changes things like how you move, it changes things like how aggressive you are, it changes things like, you know, so there's this huge knock-on effect, I guess, that isn't just related to the win condition. And it feels like a totally different game. From 8th edition in a lot of ways. Like, the mechanics are still the same, but the actual, like, how to win games is totally different, and how to actually play your army is totally
different. Which then goes back to how you construct your army is very different, too. So, yeah, it has been a very different experience playing the game. I agree with you. And especially the one thing I don't miss, for lack of a better term, is that pressure of I have to kill something this turn to stay in the game. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, it doesn't matter where it's located, as long as I knock out a unit. So, because if you don't kill anything, your opponent automatically gets 2 points because they got kill and kill more. So it's like, oh, quick, what's going to happen? I need to kill something. And so that, yeah, like you said, your target priority, then you're like, now I'm like, if I kill something, it doesn't really, as long as I need to kill something on an objective to take points away or somehow remove them from being able to score second.
Yeah. Well, also the other thing too is like, it's because it's so objective based, you're less worried about killing things that are going to kill you and just more worried about killing things that are going to stop them from scoring. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you end up spending a lot of time killing things like troops and things with OBSEC over like really scary units, because the scary units can't score as well. And so the way that you kind of prioritize targets totally changes as well. And I think that's really,
it reminds me of 5th edition, because back then you only scored on the last turn and only troops scored. Basically, there was no objective secured. It was, you know, your elites didn't hold objectives. And that was always our team strategy, was kill troops, win games. And same idea here. If you can knock off the OBSEC and force them, oh, you got Death Guard, you know, or not Death Guard. Yeah, we'll say Death Guard Terminators. Great. They're going to be holding an objective if you want to win this game, rather than charging.
Yeah,
me.
Overall, so, very excited to be playing again. It's got me like, you know, it's one of those things. It's funny, like, I didn't play for so long, and I was like, I wonder if I'm gonna like still have that fire in me when I play a game, because I hadn't played it. I didn't really have this really strong desire to play a game, and then after my first game, I was like, okay, when's the next game? Like, right back in it. Like, the fire was there. Like, the excitement was there. I was just, like, super hyped already. So it's funny how the, how quickly that comes back once you get your taste.
Yeah, I can't wait for this to get started. The fire is there. I've been ready now. Like, tomorrow I have the day off, so it's going to be a lot of just get things set out of the way so now I can just get focused on hobby projects and get ready to be on the table as opposed to, oh, I haven't touched this model in a while. You know, it's going to be with tournament focus, which is great.
I've actually wait for that to happen. I know this is like slightly impressive, but I'm almost, and I'm going to be careful how I word this. I've almost painted every model I own that's assembled, quote unquote, the keyword being assembled. Assembled. That is a lot of models still I've painted in the last like 3 months. I'm the only thing I really have, I don't have a ton left. I have 3 sets of Indominus for my Marines, but as far as my Chaos is concerned, I really only have about, I have nothing left like new in box besides a Heldrick, which I've been putting off. Those models are the devil, and I never want to have to paint one again.
All those little lines.
Yeah, it was actually funny. I was on Scardcast earlier the week, and they asked me what my least favorite model to paint was, and I answered the Heldrake because I'd painted 2 before, and they said that 4 out of the 5 people they'd asked that question answered the same way. So it's like it's got a record here. That model is just horrendous.
Oh, that's a fun show, by the way. If you have it, to sit there and paint while talk to Skari.
Yeah, I was on the show and check out me paint.
Unfortunately, I had a crazy day at work that day, and I didn't know it was supposed to be planned. It was literally showed up for work. Says, "Oh, good, you're here. The owners will be here in an hour." The what? I guess I won't be watching the show. Darn. It all turned out to be good. So, but yeah, I missed that. But I was joking with Jim earlier in the week that all Skari posted, here's all my guests this week for Put Paint on It. And it was, you know, such and such from this show and such from this fame. And then just like Jim Vessel. Like, if you don't know who Jim is.
I've lost all my the shine. I guess I'm going to have to kind of get it back. Well, you know, I was mentioning how the team that we played, I guess the guy that I played was like so happy to just lose 12-8 because this is GT winner Jim Vessel. Like, they had pumped me up to be this like big shot 40k player, and I'm like, you guys realize I played 2 games of 40k in a year, right? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, don't worry about it. And apparently, and this is, I don't know if this is true or not, but they had, well, when we had originally done our matchups, they basically, they're like, oh, you guys are Canadian national team, we're just this like hodgepodge players, we're like awful, we're gonna like lose, like, you know, go easy on us. It was very like cordial, like it was like they basically were trying to like tell themselves how bad they were. And it turns out apparently they had logged as a team like 340 hours on TTS or something crazy like that. And like, holy, I found that crap out today, and I was like, wait a minute, these guys basically tried to hustle us. Like, they had all this TTS time and were trying to sell themselves as noobs. Meanwhile, I played like 3 hours of 40k in the last year. So I was like, they're definitely better than me. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. So it was pretty.
Oh my god, people are hustling.
It was a 40k hustle. So.
Well, in case you're wondering, are there other people in the world who are actually playing this game? There is, and we have the new ITC Top 10, believe it or not. And everyone in the Top 10 at this point has already been to 2 events in the ITC, which I think is stunning. A lot of RTT, so if you have an opportunity to play at a local event and do it safely, take advantage of it. Let's make sure it's safe and also support your local vendors. But with no further ado, your Top 10. In 10th place, Jeremiah Petit, 227 points. 9th place, Jamie Pirozzolo. I did practice that ahead of time, Jamie. I apologize. So Jamie Pirozzolo is in 9th place. 8th place, Ryan Snyder. 7th place, Aelstein Sigurdsson. Clearly, he's not from Kansas. So 6th place, Hydor Poor Stefansson. 5th place, Jason McKenzie. Sorry, not a great name. Great performance, but terrible name. Joshua Reisner comes in 4th place. A gentleman by the name of Sweet Lou comes in 3rd place. James Piper in 2nd place. And your current ITC champion here for the 3rd week of February is Nathan Fennell with 320 points.
Well, good for everyone that gets to play 2 games. Events. Hopefully I'll make a late season push if things start to get back to normal.
So, yeah, interesting predictions there. I'm wondering just how crowded the end of the season will be. There's a lot of, you know, how many people are just going to throw a quick tournament to get points. TOs, I know, be looking ahead. I'm like, okay, my event is pretty much dead in the water at this point for a March start. But do we slap something together for October and take our chances? So I'd be curious to see if there's a lot more opportunities to get points later in the year. Just
imagine that probably someone from Australia or New Zealand wins ITC this year, considering that they're able to have full events. So, like, I kind of feel like they're able to have like massive. They're going to be playing a lot more Warhammer than we are up here.
I would agree. I think it's going to be very regionalized, but again, safety first. It's not. It's a game of toy soldiers. It's not worth the infection rate. So, all right. So, that is your Dicey Top 10 for this week. A lot more to go on. So we're hoping we get a couple more drips of Drukhari stuff coming out through the rest of the week, as well as some more previews from Warhammer community. I'm also curious, because as we went on the air, the Warhammer community page has been down for repairs. I'm curious what they're working on. So it'll be always fun to see that. So in the meantime, apparently Jim has no more painting to do.
If anyone has a line on some Death Shroud Terminators new in box, shoot me a DM. I've been trying to like hustle my way to a box of them, and no one seems to have any.
Okay, good luck with that. And again, like I said, if anyone's buying that Kill Team Pariah and they don't know what to do with the box and the terrain and the mat, the board.
Well, also, if you didn't know, they're running a contest on the GW site to win models in your shopping cart. So check out the, I don't know where you actually sign up, but basically just put stuff in your cart and connect your account. It's the way to enter. So I put four Keepers of Secrets in my cart. So fingers crossed.
There you go. I saw that. I connected my accounts, but I didn't put anything in my cart yet. I should have.
The 25th, or it's pretty quick here coming up, the venture deadline.
Yeah. So we're recording on Sunday the 23rd, so by the time you hear this episode, you are probably at the deadline. So move fast. Mach schnell. So, Ray, any parting thoughts before we close the show? All right, then. So without further ado, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.